are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Great teams go from 18 point lead to 28 point lead, 25, and they keep us there. And we just haven't got to that level yet where we put our foot on people's throats and don't let up.
What is happening, and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, January 7th, as we reflect on maybe the worst loss of the season. There I said it. This is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for more than a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Appreciate you guys coming with us in the new year here. But today we're going to be looking back to Saturday night's game against Utah, detail the brilliance of Donovan Mitchell. I know that's what you want to hear as Pistons fans, on and on about the Spider-Man, but we're going to go a little deeper into the bench problems and also the turnover numbers from Saturday night and talk detail what went wrong there, the two biggest culprits on the Pistons' end in a collapse of epic proportions for Detroit. We're also going to move on a little bit and talk about tonight's game at home against the San Antonio Spurs in a rematch of the 2005 NBA Finals. And also tomorrow we're going to hear from a listener who, like many of you, didn't like my trade idea from Friday's show. So we'll get into that a little bit on Tuesday's show. But give me a follow, by the way, on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons dash Matt Shook. Another, if you're a Pistons fan, another rough weekend for us out there, but some good basketball being played by the college teams. The Wolverines taking care of business on Sunday against number 21 Indiana, and then Michigan State with a nice road win at Ohio State on Saturday as well. But around the sports world, Cody Parkey, man, I guess we could take a little bit of pleasure in this. I hope you're like me and maybe take a little bit of sick satisfaction and what happened to the Bears on Sunday. I got a group text with some buddies, and we talked about how, he's probably going to be coming back to the Bears next season as their kicker because of the dead money ramifications of a four-year deal that he signed. The other option for the Chicago Bears, I know this isn't Locked On Bears, but I'll get to the point here in a second. The other option for the Bears is to cut him and eat $5.1 million of dead money against the salary cap. So we're all having a very good laugh about how Cody Parkey might cost the Bears $5 million next season. But then I remembered, as a Pistons fan, I can't laugh too long, because next year, when Cody Parkey could potentially eat up $5.1 million of dead money for the Bears, that's right, you know where I'm going with this, Josh Smith will once again eat up $5.3 million of dead money for the Pistons. Next year will be year five, which is the fifth whole season that Josh Smith did not play for the Pistons, but yet is a significant part against the cap for the Pistons. And I know that the Josh Smith era was bad, terrible, and we've talked about it, and we'll talk about it some more as that date at the end of next season slowly creeps up towards us here in 2020. But wouldn't you like to know what happened behind the scenes for Stan Van Gundy to feel like he needed to do that right away in his first year as coach? There's got to be some things that we don't know about there, right? To cripple the franchise in that way for the next five seasons, I mean, talk about making your mark right away as coach. But moving on, next, speaking of those Pistons and bad times, 101-105 on Saturday night at home against the Utah Jazz. I was in the house writing for the Detroit News. By the way, I went through the numbers. Pistons have now played 20 home games. I have been at 10 of those games as a writer or once as a fan, and also have missed 10 of those games and just watched them on TV like you guys. Right now, I'm 7-3 as far as wins in games that I've been to, and 4-6 in games that I have not been to that the Pistons played. So maybe in these next 22 home games, I'll try to make an effort to be down there and living right about two blocks away from the stadium now, or maybe about three or four city blocks away from the stadium. So I will make an effort to maybe get to some games from a fan perspective, get the cheap StubHub tickets when I'm not working at them, and maybe we'll help out the cause a little bit there. But the Pistons fall to 17-20, now 11-9 at home on the way so far this season. So pretty good at 11-9 at home, and then just 6-11, rough road record. Pistons now tied for the low water mark of the season at three games under 500, and somehow finally out of the Eastern Conference playoff hunt. or they're in the hunt, but they're outside of the top eight. Behind such great teams as Miami, Brooklyn, and Charlotte, the 6, 7, and 8 seeds, a full game behind Brooklyn and Charlotte for the 8th seed. Those teams are tied for the 7th seed, and obviously the next team would be the 8th seed. So dark times indeed for the Pistons. And the reason I said at the top of the show that I thought this might be the worst loss of the season, Utah just came in here to Detroit ready to be buried. Ironically, the Utah game at home might have been the worst loss of last season, too. So we're getting a little bit of a bad pattern here against Quinn Snyder's teams. The Pistons lost that big lead, remember, after Andre Drummond had a brilliant start to the fourth quarter, and then the Pistons just kind of collapsed at the end of the fourth. Game went to overtime, folded at the end there, and I think Joe Ingles got lost on an inbound pass. And that was a tough one. That was a sad one. Ricky Rubio found him under the basket wide open. And really, that was game one of a long win streak for Utah last year and was a big part of the big slide for the Pistons pre-Blake Griffin trade. And it feels like we might be on the cusp of that again as far as Utah going on a nice run and Detroit going continuing a slide. I just don't like the vibe around the Pistons at all. And I'm basically on team sell at this point. And more on that as the week goes on as we keep going towards the trade deadline. 1 month from today, by the way. But it was the Jazz second game in two nights on Saturday. They were tired. Pistons took a 31-13 lead after one quarter, a brilliant quarter for the Pistons, and the lowest output of points on the season for the Jazz in the first quarter, up by 18, cruising along. One thing I did there at courtside, and you can make get mad at me if you want about this, but I won't apologize because it's something you have to do when you're envisioning all the scenarios. You got to turn in a story at the buzzer for the first edition there. But I went ahead and did the opposite when the game swung. So I'm always covering all the bases. But I looked up the Pistons' biggest win of the season when they were up 18 after the first quarter. Turns out it's only 19. The Pistons haven't won a game by 20 points yet this season. But that became a non-issue for my story for Saturday's game. As Utah climbed back to within two late in the second quarter behind Derek Favors, who was strong in that quarter there. And just pathetic bench play by the Pistons, who held off Utah throughout much of the second half until the beginning of the fourth quarter. Donovan Mitchell was just a freak, as you know. 24 of his 26 points were in the second half. The Pistons contained him well. In the first half, he just had 2 points there. And I felt bad for writing about it in the story, but the contrast between him and Luke Kennard in this game could not have been more stark. And I don't know if you've heard this, but the Pistons actually had a chance of drafting Donovan Mitchell in the 2017 draft. Instead, went with Luke Kennard with the 12th pick before Mitchell was actually picked by the Nuggets and then traded to the Utah Jazz for Trey Lyles, the former Kentucky star. So it was actually Denver that picked him next. Or maybe that trade was arranged before the pick was made. But anyway, and I'm kidding there. Obviously, if you're a Pistons fan, you know well, you're well aware of the fact that Donovan Mitchell was there and available. But Luke Kennard, 2 points in 13 minutes off the bench, 1 for 5 from the field. So again, couldn't be more of a contrast, as Mitchell was the star that he's been for most of his time with Utah, outdueling Detroit's own star, Blake Griffin, who had 34 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. Blake had 11 points in the final 3 minutes and change. He was terrific, trying to claw this team back. 19 points for Reggie Bullock, who was fantastic early, made his first 4 threes in the game, finished 5 of 8 from deep. So if you're looking for a silver lining in this one, that's an important stat as the trade deadline nears. And Reggie Bullock is a guy who I've talked about the Pistons should go ahead and sell. A lot of differing opinions out there about that, obviously. Andre Drummond had his typical 15 and 18. 15 plus on the rebounding end. Some empty stats in my mind, and I know not many of yours, including those 17 defensive rebounds out of his 18 rebounds, which, you know, if you aren't going in transition, aren't as valuable as they used to be in a league where teams really aren't crashing the offensive glass as much as yesteryear, except for allegedly Andre Drummond. He didn't really either on Saturday. Ended up with 1 offensive rebound, so wasn't really making an impact in this one. One guy who did have an impact very positively sometimes, and then down the stretch very negatively, Bruce Brown, a career-high 12 points, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on after the break. But we kind of struggled offensively late in the game, and we're used to seeing that. The Pistons fall for the 4th time in 5 games, and that will get them at, I believe, 1-2 in the 2019 portion of the season, the blowout loss to Milwaukee, the win against Memphis, and now the loss to the Utah Jazz at home next. But up next, we're going to go a little bit deeper into the loss, talk about the turnovers, talk about the bench, two of the biggest culprits in this game. But the Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. You got to check that out. On Twitter, follow Locked On NBA Net. You get all the Locked On Podcast Network local hosts covering the NBA on one feed. It's amazing during games with all the breaking news that is coming, and also for the local perspective on the big stuff out there. Tom Thibodeau goes down in Minnesota. I'd love to listen to that show on Monday. Looking forward to it. It's amazing during games on that feed as well. So check that one out. And also on Instagram, LockedOnNBAnet. The biggest stories in just 1 minute on your Instagram stories at the top of the app. And also the longer cuts on the biggest stories in the feeds regularly there as well. So make sure you follow LockedOnNBAnet on both Twitter and Instagram.
Yes, sir!
I thought the heart, the fight, the way we started the game is the way you have to play in this league. Every possession, you know, and I thought our starters came out and did that in the second unit. Usually are the ones that come in and really move the ball and move, you know, we didn't have that in the second quarter. And then it continued over in the second half with our turnovers down the stretch. I think we had four in the first half, which was terrific. And then we had 14, I think it was, in the second half. So, again, that was a ball game right there. Again, we got, you know, the thing about it, I thought we played a heck of a game in the first half. Ball was moving, we was defending, had that stretch in the second quarter that was bad. But the way we came out with the disposition, the force we were playing with was the best I thought we've played all year. And then it just flipped the switch in the second half. So, again, for us, maintaining that, getting that going, maintaining the focus, whatever that is, of taking care of the basketball, making good decisions when the other team turns up the heat, we gotta learn to do that and take care of the ball and those decisions.
That was something that the Pistons certainly did not do on Saturday, as Coach Dwayne Casey speaks to the media after the game against the Utah Jazz. But later on, we're going to talk about the Spurs, a team coming in tonight hot, four straight wins, all against good teams. We'll tell you what to expect from Greg Popovich and them. You probably got a pretty good idea, as the Spurs are a bit of a known commodity throughout the NBA right now. But we have to talk a little bit more about Saturday, as we're contractually obligated to do, despite a disappointing loss for the Pistons. First, the bench crumbled in the second quarter. As you know, the Pistons were outscored 35-22 in the second quarter after going up by 18 after a magnificent first quarter, largely by the starters in that one. So only going to the locker room at halftime with a five-point lead after Blake Griffin beat the buzzer with a three-pointer was truly ominous for how things would go. And what went wrong for the bench? Well, you know, Zaza Pachulia was out. That didn't help. He had his third straight game that he missed with a leg contusion. And the depth is also hurt by the fact that Glenn Robinson the third, continues to be, he's healthy. He's back from his injury with the ankle, but not play at all. He's out of the rotation in the doghouse, so to speak, for the little big dog. And despite the fact that the Jazz starters have struggled as a unit, I thought that Jay Crowder kind of came in off the bench and added something to the mix there in the second quarter. He made a difference with his physicality. And as I looked at the box score, was backed up by the fact that he was a plus 10 on the night. So we know that individual plus minus games aren't the big thing, but it backed up what I saw with the eye test. And also, quite simply, no one on the bench for the Pistons did anything as a unit throughout the game. Just the five guys that played, they only had five guys come off the bench. They shot 5 of 20 from the field, including 1 of 5 from three-point land. That's not going to get it done. Awful numbers there all the way around. Derek Favors in the second quarter just started doing some work inside. Really helped Utah climb back in the game. And just looking at the guys on the Pistons bench right now, Jose Calderon had a nice little stretch for a couple weeks there. Made us believe as a unit that maybe, or as a fan base, that maybe the Spaniard could hold the tide with Ishmael out and kind of be the backup point guard, get some meaningful minutes, and really, like I said, did some work for a couple weeks, but that magic is gone for the 37-year-old right now. Luke Kennard, once again, non-existent. Stanley Johnson, he was worse. 0 for 3 from 3 for him, not making any big plays defensively. John Luehr, invisible. Langston Galloway only plays 3 minutes, which is strange for him, especially when the Pistons needed an offensive spark. But no contributions from any of those guys. And so, and as the team kind of slugged it out late, the Pistons got careless. We talked about it. Dwayne Casey mentioned it. 4 turnovers in the first half, 14 turnovers as a team in the second half. Bruce Brown, who largely played a pretty good game, had 7 assists with the start there. He had a couple of late turnovers out of his 4. And then the big one, the Pistons had to use their final timeout on the second-to-last possession for some reason, as Reggie Jackson got caught up on the sidelines. And you should never, 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 never run out of timeouts in a basketball game at any level. You've got all sorts of them to use, and especially when you're caught with your pants down with no timeouts in the final possession. Just a bad look for the coaching staff, bad look for the players, including your point guard, who had to waste one the play before that. So no timeouts, no TOs on the final possession led to another TO in terms of a turnover. And Reggie Jackson with the Pistons down three, chance to tie with 12.3 seconds left, pushed it without the timeout. It crossed half court and threw a terrible pass to Reggie Bullock, who was coming off of the Andre Drummond screen. Bullock, you know, a bad pass, obviously, but couldn't make the catch, couldn't come up with it in a big moment. Joe Ingles picks it up, game over, as they knock down some free throws at the very end from Ricky Rubio. Late game execution continues to be an issue. Nothing good from Reggie Jackson at the end. You can't play Calderon there in that spot. Dwayne Casey has refused to play Bruce Brown or Luke Kennard in any moments for point guard. And look, Luke played poorly, but he's got to get more than 13 minutes. He's got to get more than five shots. And he's been playing pretty well lately. He's earned the spot to not have great stretches and to stay in there and to earn the confidence of his coaching staff. It's like Stan Van Gundy part two with Luke Kennard this year. And look, we've talked about it before. Luke is the only guy on this current roster who can lift this team up from mediocrity in any way. Not to say that he's going to transform this team into a contender, but just to lift them into somewhere where, you know, you're not sweating out the final couple weeks of the season to see whether this team gets in the playoffs. And I still think this team ends up in the playoffs, mostly because how bad the East is, but certainly would not be surprised right now if this team ends up outside of the playoffs. So again, I'm giving Dwayne a failing grade in this game. The problems that we've seen repeatedly, really. Blake almost willed this team to a win late. Andre, again, might as well not have been out there. It's a broken record. He's not protecting the rim at all. The numbers dictate that from cleaning the glass. Not coming up with any big rebounds of note late in games. He's had some this season, but not enough. And certainly not scoring late in games. And now this team is 17-20 behind scrub teams like Brooklyn without Caris LeVert, their best player. A mediocre Charlotte team, a Miami team without much talent that really struggled early on in the season. Now the Pistons behind them. They're going nowhere and without significant injuries too. I know there was a cluster of bench injuries. Some bench pieces have missed games. And certainly Ish Smith would help this team right now. The Pistons are 4-11 since Ish Smith went down. And it's an issue, but we know that the schedule is as much to blame for that as anything. But I'll say this too. I mean, if an Ish Smith injury derails your season, you didn't have much of a season coming anyway. And it's sad. It's sad for Pistons fans right now. But up next, I mean, can it get any better? Up next, we're going to talk about the Spurs, tonight's opponent, before the Pistons go out west for four games. But is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right here, right now on Locked On Pistons. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their favorite shows. Our demo is 98% males with more education and more earning power than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor Locked On Pistons. Go ahead and email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. The Spurs coming to town tonight, 7 p.m. start at Little Caesars Arena, San Antonio. Winners of four in a row, winning at the L.A. Clippers before sweeping a three-game homestand impressively against the Boston Celtics, Toronto Raptors, and Kawhi's return to San Antonio, and then the Memphis Grizzlies on Saturday. So a legit three-game homestand there for San Antonio, which is finding their groove with DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl added to the team in the big trade with Toronto in the offseason. A couple of guys there from Toronto that Dwayne Casey is certainly familiar with. And unlike Utah, which came in on the second half of a back-to-back, a loss, by the way, for the Pistons, which dropped Detroit to 2-1 this season against teams on the second half of a back-to-back, by the way. But the Spurs shouldn't be tired. They played Saturday night, just like Detroit did. And they were home for a week over the new year before that. San Antonio has won 12 of 15 games, while the Pistons have lost 13 of 17 lately. And given that information, guess who is favored? By the way, it's San Antonio. Spurs by 3.5, which is no surprise there, but there's the Spurs. But except that I would have guessed that maybe San Antonio might be favored by like 5, despite being on the road. You look deeper, the Spurs are a bad 6-12 on the road this season. So maybe the Pistons can look to keep that trend going of Popovich and the crew being bad away from the Lone Star State. As we mentioned, Detroit is now 11-9 at home, so firmly mediocre there at Little Caesars Arena in front of the home crowd. The Spurs are now 23-17 on the season, the sixth seed, but basically tied with Houston and Portland for the fifth seed out west right now. A revelation for them this season has been Bryn Forbes, the former Michigan State player, a G Leaguer at times throughout his career, but has evolved and blossomed into a bigger role with the San Antonio Spurs, starting all 40 games for Popovich this season and averaging 12.3 points per game. He is making 43% from three-point land, a place that the Spurs have been excelling percentage-wise, leading the league in three-point percentage at 39.8%. However, that said, they are lowest in the league and in three-point attempts at 24.4 per game. And Dwayne Casey talked before Saturday's game against Utah about how San Antonio is still going for those mid-range shots, kind of bucking the league trend. Of course, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they might have two of the best mid-range shooters in this era in the game, and DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge there. But they are taking the most mid-range jumpers in the league, and what I'm referring to as mid-range is 15 to 19 feet. The Spurs are taking 13.2 of those per game, just ahead of Golden State at 13.1, interestingly enough. A little bit surprising, given the reputation of three-point gunners for the Warriors, but it's been much publicized that the Golden State Warriors, including Klay Thompson, are throwing up a lot of mid-range jumpers this year. But San Antonio also getting the least shots at less than 5 feet as well throughout the league. So least in threes, least in layups, which would be totally against the Dwayne Casey shot spectrum that we've heard about since ad nauseum, really, since he got hired as the Pistons coach. And not just him. I mean, it's kind of the league-wide theory as it goes right now. So, but again, the Spurs, their success is another indication that maybe the answer isn't always keeping up with the Joneses throughout the NBA. Maybe there is a spot for different styles in this league still, although Detroit pretty much abandoned their style of physical, defensive basketball, tough-minded basketball many, many years ago. Not that I'm bitter about that or anything like that. But LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, he's kind of slept on a little bit throughout the league, but he's a perennial all-star. After his career, he had a bit of a blip, one or maybe a season and a half or so in San Antonio when he first came over there, but that's been smoothed over throughout the organization. Interestingly, it'd be interesting to see who, if those guys makes the All-Star team out west, one or both of DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. That's a tough one with those names, but I could see both of those guys making it in one world or both of them not making it in a certain world as well, considering how strong the West is. You could maybe split votes with those guys, so to speak. I do predict that LaMarcus Aldridge gets on, though, a little bit easier for a Western Conference front court guy, with Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic being the only like slam dunk all-stars as far as post players there. So there could be a spot for Aldridge, whereas DeRozan's going to have a tougher hill to climb with those Golden State guys and James Harden and kind of a bevy of Western Conference guards. Dame Lillard will get his due at some point throughout his career, I got to believe. But Derek White, speaking of guards getting their due, playing well at point guard lately for San Antonio, but certainly not a team that's led by their point guard, not a team that's dominated by their point guard offensively, which could be a nice thing for the Pistons, who struggled defensively against good point guards. But again, the Pistons have the advantage of Casey being very familiar with DeMar DeRozan from their days together in Toronto. And maybe this is a chance to surprise, given that you could catch a team there that's, again, plays to the strengths of the Pistons with not being a strong point guard-led team offensively, and maybe the Pistons could respond from Saturday night. So there, I did it. I talked myself into thinking that the Pistons have a chance to win this game. So we got there. It was a long journey on this episode of Locked On Pistons, but we did get there. So give me a follow and reward me for a little bit of that positivity there on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-MattSchuk. And that'll do it for our episode today. Enjoy the game against the San Antonio Spurs tonight in downtown Detroit. Like I said, we got some more trade talk coming tomorrow. We will recap the game against the Spurs and look ahead to the West Coast road trip as well. But this is your host, Matt Schoch of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Monday, everyone.